Deborah Voigt has sung in opera houses and concert halls around the world, partnering with the likes of Luciano Pavarotti and Placido Domingo. During her distinguished career, she's always had problems with her weight, and a turning point in her life came when she was fired by the Royal Opera House in London because she was deemed too heavy to fit into her costume. Now, slimmer and healthier, Deborah Voigt is keeping very busy. She's still performing, she's hosting TV and radio shows, and she will be presenting a new one-woman show written by Terrence McNally. On top of that, she's written a memoir about her life and career called Call Me Debbie, True Confessions of a Down-to-Earth Diva. It's published by HarperCollins. I'm very pleased to welcome Deborah Voigt back to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Hi. Nice to be here again.
And first, I want to welcome you as a colleague because you hosted a TV series on our sister station, WQXR, cleverly called The Sopranos, and it's just too bad that you couldn't have won a Tony for that.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, right? It's been a lot of fun, though. A lot of fun. I'm enjoying it.
Is it as you went on with the career, you decided you wanted to do other things? Or did you this is just who you are?
Well, I think it's both, that I want to do other things, and it is who I am. I think part of my frustration with opera, while it's been really wonderful to me and for me, is that it has kept my personality a distance from the audience. I'm always portraying other characters. I'm never able to be myself. And so having the format of The Sopranos with WQXR or hosting some of the HD things that I do for the Met or the one-woman show that you mentioned gives me a chance to show a different side of my personality.
And you're not just some character that Wagner created.
No, although those are not bad characters. If you have to be trapped in a character, Wagner's are pretty good.
Why do you call yourself a down-to-earth diva? Aren't the terms contradictory?
Well, I think that they are. I was talking to a friend of mine recently about my rider for my contracts when I do recitals and such. And I asked for things like water and honey and tea and fruit. And we started to think about, well, what would a real diva's rider be like? And I think probably things like don't look at me when I walk on stage, which is sort of famously attached to a soprano whose name I won't mention. But I think people have really preconceived ideas about divas and their sort of scandalous behavior sometimes.
Well, you tell you a story about AIDS walking in front of Jesse Norman to miss the air in front of her. That sounds pretty diva-ish.
Well, I have to say that Miss Norman denies it. But nonetheless, I do remember it happening. And the misters were disappointed to see it was just Debbie Voigt and not Jesse Norman.
Now, why do you think this has been attached to Sopranos? Is it because they play goddesses and mythical creatures so often?
I think so. They're sort of revered and placed on a pedestal. They play the ingenue, the one who's having her heart broken or dying for her love. And I think people sort of look at us a bit oddly sometimes.
I would still assume that there are some diva-ish contraltos. And you've sung with some of the greats, Placido Domingo, Luciano Pavarotti. Can tenors be as temperamental as sopranos? Is anyone ever called a divo?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
Il Divo, yes. Yeah, they can be. I don't think it happens quite as often.
Is there a double standard, do you think, for men?
I think there are fewer of them. Just by nature of the fact that there are a lot more women singers. So I think maybe they can get away with it a little bit more.
You open your memoir with the voice of God. What message did you receive when you were 14 years old?
Well, I had this experience where I woke up bright and early in the morning and I heard what I interpreted to be God telling me that I meant to sing and that it ended up being opera was sort of random, but I definitely heard that, and it's something that has carried me throughout my career.
Well, wasn't your first musical heroine Karen Carpenter, who had a very different kind of a weight issue?
She did, yes. I loved Karen Carpenter from the first minute that I heard her sing. And I have wondered, you know, was there something else that I recognized on some sort of subconscious level that I could identify with? But yeah, we lost her way too soon.
How did it wind up becoming opera?
I decided to take Voigt, voice. I'm plugging my show. Decided to take voice lessons. And I had two options. One was a very expensive teacher that was about an hour away from my parents' home in Orange County, California. He was a pop voice teacher. Or I could take voice lessons with the wife of my...
Are we having problems with the translation?
Yes, we really are, yes. Anyway,
you sing in German so often.
Long, long story short, she was an opera singer. And so she began to teach me a classical vocal pedagogy.
So you just... that's what she was teaching you?
That's what she taught me.
And that's where your voice went?
That's where my voice went. And I think, too, that by the time I was a senior in high school or a freshman in college, I had started to put weight on. And so the idea of being a Broadway singer seemed less likely.
Did your father's attempts to regulate your eating habits exacerbate the problems?
I think it confused me. Because on the one hand, don't have another cookie, Debbie. On the other hand, let's all be members of the Clean Plate Club. So I think I had a sort of distorted relationship with food from the very beginning.
At your wedding, a woman expressed surprise that someone with a slight weight problem would choose to wear a wedding dress. People can be rude to others who are overweight.
People could be rude to people for no reason at all, as we well know. I did make the unfortunate decision to dress myself in about 600 yards of taffeta and tulle, which maybe wasn't the best fabric choice.
The white does
and
make
I
you
wasn't
look
just,
larger.
I wasn't just a little girl. I was quite heavy.
My guest is Deborah Voigt, who's written a memoir called Call Me Debbie, True Confessions of a Down-to-Earth Diva. The one place you would have thought it would be safe to be a large woman would be in the world of opera. Haven't large opera singers always been the norm, especially the Wagnerians? I mean, there's that line, of course, it ain't over until the fat lady sings, and that has to do with Wagnerian opera.
Well, it does. But when you look at a large Wagnerian singer, they may have a barrel chest. They might be big boned. They might have a larger than life sort of presence. But there's a difference between that and someone who's morbidly obese. And that's where I had gone to. When I walked out on stage, there was no question but that person had some sort of a problem.
There was that sense that it led to the weight actually improved some people singing and gave them more stamina. But I would think that it would have slowed you down.
Yeah, I don't think stamina was the benefit. If there was any benefit at all, it's that when one takes a breath with all that weight, it sort of automatically engages the abdominal muscles and the voice just goes flying out over the orchestra.
One of the, I guess it's a funny story, although it must have been sad at the time, is the one you tell about Sir George Scholte, the great conductor, who hesitated to have you sing Tristan and Isolde unless you lost weight. And that was for a recording.
Yes, yes. That was an interesting day. Yes, he was auditioning for this recording. And when I finished singing, and I had sung very well, he got up and he walked over to me and he said, "Why are you so fat? Is it the food?" And I thought, well, maestro, I mean, what do you say to George Scholte when he says something like that? I said, yes, it's the food. And he assured me that if I would try to lose some weight before I saw him again, that he would, in fact, cast me for the recording of Tristan and Isolde. I did lose some weight, and unfortunately he passed away before we could make that recording.
Now, in the past, the opera singers were expected to have glorious voices. They kind of stood there and they sang. Acting was not a big issue. Did you take acting lessons?
I did not. I took life lessons. I think that young singers in particular have a bad rap because just trying to put together a good sound and walk across the stage is really challenging enough. But
and
also,
I've seen singers on their backs singing
exactly.
While they're lying on their back.
Yeah, you have to have control of your body and your mechanism. But also you have to have had life experiences in order to really portray some of these characters.
Has the emphasis on acting led to more emphasis on looks?
I think that, yes, I think to a certain extent it has. But at the same time, if you have a singer who has a phenomenal talent, they are going to raise to the top of the pile, whether they're a size 4 or not. But that being said, opera is certainly more visually oriented than it has been.
Ariadne in Richard Strauss's opera Ariadne und Auf Naxos is considered your signature role. Why is it such a good fit?
Well, Strauss writes so beautifully for women's voices in particular, and he writes these beautifully arching phrases that I just happen to be very good at singing. He also writes about characters that I could identify with. Ariadne is trapped on an island waiting for her love to return. That's something I can sort of relate to, sadly.
Because among the stories you tell here is problems with men, which we won't go into, but...
Well, thank you for that, Leonard. I do appreciate it.
But you do write about it.
I do write about it. You'll have to read about it.
You also say it's easier for you to sing in German than in other languages.
I think that's because I have a voice that's naturally placed very forward in the mask. And so the bright vowels of German, I think, suit me better. I have often thought, though, that if my name was Deborah Voitini, that maybe people would have thought of me as more Italianate.
Do you think it's sad that Mozart, who could have written all of his operas in German, wound up writing so many in Italian?
I don't think there's anything sad about anything that Mozart wrote.
You described Brunhilde as the role of your career. That controversial production of Wagner's Ring cycle at the Met, the one with the weird set.
the machine.
You tripped at one point, didn't you?
I did.
Was that scary?
Yes, it was very scary. It was the opening night of Die Walküre, and I was all ready to run out on stage and sing my Hoyo to Hose. And it was not the set's fault. It was mine. I stepped onto her and caught my dress and slid all the way down. And, yeah, that was really not one of my best moments.
But how important is the set? Because you've performed that opera in more traditional settings. Wagner is always a problem for set designers because they're so fantastical.
Well, I think the Metropolitan Opera was trying to do something that had never been done before and something that could not be compared to anything that had been done before. And that was certainly a success with Lepage's production.
It's ironic that the role that you're so identified with is the role that you were fired from, Ariadne. What happened at London's Royal Opera? I know you were here right afterward to talk about it, but... Can you just, for listeners who weren't listening on that day in 2005, can you tell us?
Well, I had been engaged to do this production of Ariadne off Naxos. I had sung at the Royal Opera House twice prior to this engagement, so they knew what I looked like when they signed the contract. And sometime after the contract was signed, it was determined that I was not going to be appropriate for the production because the costume was a little black sort of cocktail dress. This was not the first time that I had been told that a costume was going to be a problem for me in my career, so that was not a shock. The problem was that they didn't find something to replace it, and that led to a greater conversation, and the story got out, and it. I'm sure that when history is written of my period of the opera world, there'll be a little black dress next to my picture.
But you had an operation, a bypass operation, and it's worked for you.
It has.
Better than for Chris Christie.
I'm going to leave that one alone. Yeah, it's worked very well. It's not a cure. I still fluctuate 10, 20 pounds up and down. I think I put the same 10 pounds on and off about 10 times in the last year and a half. It'll always be an issue.
Another new project you're involved with is your one-woman show called Voight Lessons, which...
which I've said way too many times today.
That's written by Terrence McNally, who wrote Masterclass and many other plays, but also obviously is a great lover of opera.
He is. That he is. The genesis of the project was a conversation that I had with the other co-creator, Francesca Zambello, about the recital format and how to present recitals in a way that might be more engaging, more interesting. And she said, I think you need to write a one-woman show. And I thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. And she said, I think we should ask Terrence McNally to write it. And I thought, as you just mentioned, he wrote Masterclass. He's not going to want to write for Debbie Voight. But he did. And I had been keeping a list of songs, just random songs that I like, from a Karen Carpenter song to a spiritual to a Brahms lead. And Terrence was able to weave my story into this theatrical piece.
And you do like to sing songs from the Great American Songbook, along with the great compositions of the great composers of the past. Do you do a lot of new music?
I don't. I don't think that when you look at the new pieces that are being written for opera, they tend to write for mezzo-sopranos. There isn't really one that's been written for a dramatic soprano, so I think I might have to see what I can do about that.
I'll speak to John Carugliano the next time I see him.
Oh, please do.
Deborah Voigt will be speaking and signing books this Thursday at the 92nd Street Y at 8 o'clock. For information about tickets, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, Call Me Debbie, True Confessions of a Down-to-Earth Diva, is published by Harper. And Debbie, thank you so much for being on our show again.
It's a pleasure, Leonard. Thank you.